Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again. The light is out, and I don't know we are, I'm sure. It must be the light itself. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is otolaryngologist Dr. Nora Perkins. She comes to us from Albany ENT and Allergy Services, where she practices head and neck surgery. No, you don't.
Head and neck surgery.
Head and neck surgery, you do that. And has a particular interest in sinus disorders and laryngology. That is, diagnosis and treatment of diseases of the vocal apparatus. Dr. Perkins earned her medical degree from Albany Medical College. She completed her residency there as well, specializing in otolaryngology and head and neck surgery throughout her tenure. She has performed all aspects of surgery involving the head and neck for both adults and pediatric patients. She is a diplomate of the American College of Otolaryngology, a fellow of the American College of Surgeons, and is a fellow of the American Academy of
Otolaryngologic allergy.
Oh, yeah. Got a question for Dr. Perkins? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WMC Vox Pop. You can email us at voxpop@wmc.org. And if you missed the program or any part of it, you want to listen, just go to WMC.org and you can listen to the whole thing all over again. Well, Dr. Perkins, so good of you to be here and take time out from what I know is a very special time. Somebody wrote in already and said,
"Wonderful!
I got stung by a yellow jacket. Not unfamiliar. They burrow in the ground. They do that. And went into anaphylactic shock. Is this something that happens every once in a while?
It does happen every once in a while, and it can be very scary for the patient and the family members. Usually the first reaction, you know, has some localized swelling, but it can be fairly severe with difficulties breathing, rashes, and more advanced swelling. So certainly in that kind of a situation, you do want to go to an emergency room, seek emergency care.
Yeah.
And then once that's happened, essentially we do some blood testing, usually to confirm the allergy, although even with that history, we still recommend carrying an epinephrine injector and trying to avoid activities where you might get stung, like walking outside barefoot.
So you can have a pen around your neck. You can.
We like to have you carry that pen. And they actually come in twin packs. People usually separate them so that they can keep them in multiple places. But really, they should stay together because we want you to do an injection when you have symptoms, and then you may need to do a second injection.
So. And where do you inject into?
Your thigh.
Oh, into your thigh.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's get going. Is that all right with you?
Sounds great.
Okay, we'll go to Jim. All right, Jim. Thanks for joining us as usual. How can we help you?
Could you speak a little bit about Samter's Triad?
Sure. Samter's Triad is a combination of nasal polyposis, aspirin sensitivity, and asthma. These patients generally have fairly significant allergic disease. And that plays a role in both the asthma and the nasal polyposis. Usually, they need to be managed with multiple different mechanisms. So we need to use allergy treatment, asthma medications. Oftentimes, they will require nasal surgeries. There are places that will also perform aspirin desensitization, where essentially we try to get you on aspirin to try to reduce the symptoms. One of the limitations of that is that it can be very difficult to continue to take those high doses of aspirin for very prolonged periods of time because of some of the stomach side effects.
Mm. Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, that was Jim, and let's go to Carolyn in Red Hook. Okay, Carolyn, you're on.
Oh, hi. My question has to do with what seems to be sort of like a post-nasal drip. It's a thick stuff that runs, you know, down the back of your throat. You have to clear your throat sometimes and try to exhume it, so to speak. And I have learned recently that this might be affecting my vocal cords. I've been singing in a choral group for 25 years. And when I don't get enough sleep, it's a lot worse. And I'm wondering, what can I do about it? I don't have allergies that I know of. I don't have any other issues related to my sense of smell or taste or hearing.
So this is probably one of the most common complaints we see in our office is postnasal drainage. Postnasal drainage is actually a normal phenomena. So everybody makes a few liters of postnasal drip every day that you would just swallow normally. However, when it's a little bit more thick, if it's a little bit more irritating, either from allergy or if you have a cold, then it becomes more bothersome. So for you as a singer, you can be particularly bothered by it just because of the sort of advanced things you're doing with your voice. One of the best ways to try to reduce that symptom is to use nasal saline, either as a spray or as an irrigation. The neti pot.
You mean like the neti pot?
Yes, exactly. A neti pot or the saline rinse bottles, really all they do is they sort of clean out some of that thicker postnasal drainage and try to thin it. The other thing that sometimes can be helpful is if you do have some mild allergy, using something like a topical nasal steroid spray like Flonase or Rhinocort, which are now available over the counter, they can help reduce some of that irritation as well.
Okay, so lemon water and drinking lemon water and things like that, which I've also heard of, may or may not help massaging the shoulder muscles, neck muscles, et cetera, relaxing that area.
For actual postnasal drainage, that won't help a lot, although hydration will definitely help, so you can thin it out by staying really well hydrated. Acidic things like the lemon water, usually, especially for a singer, we try to limit that a little bit just because that may be a little irritating to the throat. Honey, warm honey and tea may be a better option for you, or honey and water.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought lemon was alkaline, but if you're saying it's acidic, okay.
Yeah, it's citrus, so it tends to be a little bit more acidic.
Thank you very
much.
Okay.
All right.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And should you ever want to say something on the listener comment line, it's 1-800-695-9170. You know, instead of just writing me dirty letters, you can just get on the phone and leave one of those. Vox Pop 348-2551, 1-800. Okay, so now we're going to go to Richard in Pittsfield. Richard, you're on. Richard.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can barely hear you. You're busting up. You're probably on a cell phone somewhere or under an electric line.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm in Pittsfield. I've got chronic Lyme, and I've got extreme neck pain and neck stiffness. If she has any suggestions how to relieve some of the neck stiffness due to chronic Lyme.
Okay. Chronic Lyme, stiff neck. And all I talk to a lot of people every day, and almost everybody has, at least they say they have Lyme disease.
Sure. So, you know, Lyme disease is very prevalent in our area, and chronic Lyme is something that is not very well understood at this point as far as after you've had treatment, some of the long-term effects that can occur. I would say that for most patients with neck pain, stiff neck, usually the best thing that we recommend is actually exercise. So we'll often refer those patients to physical therapy for massage, for neck exercises. Certainly if there's an element of inflammation, anti-inflammatories, and sometimes even if there's nerve irritation, some nerve pain medications can be helpful. So depending on exactly what the symptoms are, any of those modalities may help.
That's interesting. The idea of going to PT for that.
It works incredibly well. We honestly refer a lot of patients for neck pain, for jaw pain, temporal mandibular joint problems. The physical therapists do a really nice job with that.
Well, actually, they really do. I had
They're
these
great.
Guys at Rapture over there on Everett Road, and I have to tell you, I couldn't move my arm back, and they did it. And
it's pretty amazing.
I thought it was all phony maloney until they did it. It was great. Well, thank you, Richard. Hope that it clears up for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Ladies and gentlemen, something extraordinary has happened here at WAMC. There's nobody on the phone for a brilliant doctor who you really, really need. 1-800-348-2551. So with that, I'll ask the questions. Okay. Poison ivy. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
I recently heard that birds eat the berries and then they poop the berries and then those berries make poison ivy. We never had poison ivy on our land, but now we do.
Yes.
It can really be debilitating.
It can be incredibly debilitating, and it can be very difficult to manage as far as trying to get rid of the poison ivy. Oftentimes, you can actually bring in landscape companies, and they can help you remove it from your property. Mm-hmm. But the big thing is it's a contact dermatitis, so it's most similar to if you had like a metal allergy or a latex allergy. And so once you have exposure on your skin to the oil, you really want to try and get that off of your skin. There are some things available. Technu is an example of one that you can wash with afterward that will get the oil off of your skin. And then really, you should have limited chance of having a reaction at that point.
Right.
If you've developed the reaction, you can use over-the-counter medications to try to reduce the inflammation, or you may need to come into your physician to receive more aggressive medical treatment.
Like a steroid shot.
Exactly, like a steroid shot.
And what does a steroid shot do for you?
It reduces inflammation. So whatever the cause of the inflammation is, usually a steroid shot will slowly release steroid over about 6 weeks of time.
Really?
Yeah. They're pretty remarkable. And they have very low side effects because it's such a low dose released over a long period of time.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Thank you very much for that.
Sure.
Do I have to hang up on somebody or not? I don't think so. No. Okay. So we'll go to, we're going to go to Christine. Christine, you're on. Hello, Christine. Well, maybe not Christine. Number three. Okay, we'll go to, we're going to go to Rob in Mechanicville, where everybody has tools. Go ahead, Rob.
Hello, doctors. I hope I've reached you in good health.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, me
Wonderful.
Too.
Yeah, I've been a vocalist for most of my adult life, and I found that steam actually helps to rehydrate the vocal cords effectively. And I wanted to ask the doctor if she had any experience with, you know, direct steam, like inhalers and so on and so forth, in terms of reducing the amount of mucus on the vocal cords and just directly rehydrating the vocal cords prior to performance.
Yes, I think that any way you can improve your hydration is going to help. So by drinking dry and drinking lots of water so that your actual body is very hydrated, the mucus glands that sit right above the vocal folds tend to make mucus there that can be kind of thick if you're a little bit dehydrated. The direct steam is a great approach, as you said, to sort of directly hydrate that area. And I think that that would be very beneficial before performance. But overall, also just maintaining your body's level of hydration will help.
Of course. And being on tour and, I would get sick first week of tour. And a friend and, you know, a vocal coach recommended that I take either Robitussin DM or some guaifenesin, something to help kind of loosen things up and keep it fluid. What's your opinion?
Yes, I think mucolytics like guaifenesin can help thin the mucus in the throat, particularly when you're sick. I generally try to ask patients to avoid things like antihistamines, over-the-counter Claritin, Zyrtec, things like that, because they can actually make you a little bit more dry. But certainly the mucolytics like guaifenesin would be helpful when you're ill.
Okay, I've got to let you go because something has come
up.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, doctors. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. You're welcome.
The National Weather Service in Albany has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for Litchfield County in northern Connecticut, southern Berkshire County in western Massachusetts, Dutchess County in New York, southern Columbia County in New York until 3:15 p.m. EDT. Okay, let's go over that again. Severe thunderstorm warning for Litchfield County in northern Connecticut, southern Berkshire County in western Massachusetts, Dutchess County in New York, and southern Columbia County in New York. And we are back with Dr. Nora Perkins. Thank you so much, doctor, for being with us. This is really a great pleasure for all of us. And now we're going to line number two, all right, and where we will find Christine. Christine, you're on.
Hi, how are you? I have a question about using quercetin with bromelain. I've had severe allergies and a very bad deviated septum, and I've tried everything without much success over the years. And the only thing, and I swear by it, I'm never without it now, is the quercetin with bromelain, which actually seems to me almost like a miracle cure. So do you have any input about that?
You know, I don't have any experience with that. Is that like a chromalin nasal drop?
Quercetin is a bioflavonoid. And I don't know where it fits on, like, the holistic spectrum.
Sure.
And I know that bromelain, which is extracted from pineapple, is an enzyme. But honestly, I wasn't a believer when I started, but I, like I said, I would not be without it. It's the only thing I found, which truly, I don't even know I'm allergic at this point.
Yeah, I don't have any personal experience with that, and I have to be honest, you know, I think one thing that many medical doctors are lacking is a lot of experience with holistic medications. It's not something mm-hmm. we generally train with, but I would say if you're using, is it a nasal spray?
No, it's actually, you know, just a pill. And
it's
a natural antihistamine.
Antihistamine, yeah.
Yeah.
Then I think it, you know, there's, I can't really speak to the safety of it, but if it's being effective for your allergy management, you know, I guess as long as you're not experiencing any bad side effects, I think it sounds like it would be a reasonable treatment. But I apologize, mm-hmm. I don't have any experience with that.
Thank you so mm-hmm. much for
yeah,
your
and
call.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that, you know, again, having gone the whole medical route and having a whole cabinet full of the regular supposed, you know, cures and actually having bad side effects with Claritin and all that stuff, I was ready to kind of give up. Mm-hmm. So I found this on my own through a book called Sinus Survival, but I do think that doctors would be better served to kind of have more knowledge about alternatives.
So one of the things I've always wondered about with the alternatives is if they're so good, why don't they get tested by the NIH or by, you know, the regular route, because that makes me suspicious of them.
Right. And there is not any FDA control over those medications. So one of the challenges we have is, you know, we don't necessarily know exactly what is in them. You know, there's
exactly.
what's on the label, but that it isn't always what we find if you do testing. So that's definitely a challenge, and it wouldn't be a horrible idea to have those things brought into the FDA so that they could actually be a little bit more mm-hmm. moderated.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Jesse. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now we're going to go to Meg on line 5. Number 5, Meg. There you are, Meg. You're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because about 2 weeks ago, I took one dose of a drug called New Vigil, mm-hmm. and as a result, I've had severe sudden hearing loss with nerve damage.
Wow.
And I'm wondering if you've ever heard of that.
So I'm familiar with New Vigil and very familiar with sudden sensory neural hearing loss. I am not aware of any correlation between the two, you know, but certainly it sounds like from what you're saying, it was a pretty temporally related event. You took the medication and then pretty quickly had the sudden loss. Is that fair to say?
Within 2 hours.
Wow. I'm not familiar with that as being a common side effect, or I'm not even sure it's a listed side effect of that medication. However, that's certainly an incredibly scary thing to have happen. Now, generally with sudden hearing loss, what we recommend is very immediate treatment, usually with
okay.
oral steroids. Like as soon as we can get you into the office, we want a hearing test immediately. This is sort of one of those ENT emergencies that we talked about. We start immediate oral steroid treatment. Depending on how patients do with that, sometimes we can do some salvage treatment where we actually inject some steroid behind the eardrum, which sounds bad, but is a well-tolerated procedure. But that is a true ENT and emergency. And if you haven't seen an ear, nose, and throat doctor yet, I would definitely recommend that you see one.
Well, have you?
Yes. No, I did, and I am on steroids. I was just wondering if there was any other at what how much time do you expect to see if there's going to be improvement? Would you expect to see improvement?
So it is a little bit variable. Oftentimes what we'll do is we'll put people on oral steroids for about a week and then bring them back with a new hearing test. If they haven't had improvement, usually we'll start the series of what we call intratympanic, usually dexamethasone, but steroid injection, where we inject steroid behind the eardrum. And that's usually a series of shots, approximately one a week for usually about 4 weeks.
Have you done that?
Yes.
No, I mean.
Oh, I'm like, yes, I've done that.
No. And I'm just curious, what are the side effects of that, of those?
Like so those steroid shots don't really have a lot of side effect. It's sort of localized steroid treatment. If you're somebody who has diabetes, it can elevate your blood sugars. Steroids in general sometimes can make you sleepless, but in general, the localized treatment doesn't have a lot of side effect. One of the risks of that procedure is because you're repeatedly essentially injecting through the eardrum, you can have a small perforation of the eardrum afterward. But okay. I would definitely say it's worth the risk because trying to get back your hearing certainly would be worthwhile.
Thank you, Meg. Okay, and now we're going to go to Nancy in Niskayuna, of course.
Hi.
Hey.
I've started off with a different question, but I just wanted to comment on the lady who called about the bromelain and quercetin. She had it exactly right. Bromelain is a pineapple extracted enzyme, and quercetin is a bioflavonoid, both of which temper the body's inflammatory response, and it's very common in use for allergies, for sinusitis, but also for injuries, you know, sprains and strains and that kind of thing. And it can be extremely effective. There's also a bunch of other dietary changes that can be incorporated to reduce inflammation. Unfortunately, the average American diet is very inflammatory.
You don't sell this stuff, do you?
Actually, I'm a chiropractor, so... Sometimes I do, but that's not where I usually refer those patients down to the local health food store for the product. I don't carry a lot of that in my office, so it's not something I'm selling or saying because it's profitable for me. It's because it's true.
As long as you raise this, I've often thought about this business. Chiropractors are not licensed to. Give prescriptions for regular drugs. So I often wonder.
It's not within our scope of practice in the state of New York. That's correct.
Exactly. So I often wonder if there isn't more of an emphasis on stuff that you are allowed to sell as opposed to what you're not allowed to prescribe. I'm not trying to be cynical here, but it is an interesting question to me. Always has been.
I'm not sure what the point of your statement, but yeah, I mean, obviously we couldn't. We couldn't recommend a prescription, or even, frankly, we can't even recommend an over-the-counter medication, which is kind of crazy because the 17-year-old clerk who checks you out can certainly make a recommendation, but we're not allowed to with our years of experience and education. But
okay.
That aside,
was there anything else you had?
We do go towards the nutritional end of the spectrum. That's true.
Sure. Anything else?
I do. Actually, I have otosclerosis, and I was seen by an ENT several years ago, and a stapedectomy was recommended. And I asked the provider at that time, would they be performing an MRI? And he said, oh, no, that's not necessary. It's just not necessary. A fine cut would have to be performed. It's very expensive, and it's just not necessary. I said, all right, well, okay, fine. I ended up going through the procedure because I was, in fact, losing my hearing. When he got in there, turns out it wasn't stapes that was the involved bone. It was the malleus. And he said, I pretty much had to close you back up. There was really nothing else for me to do.
Okay. Let's stop there for a second. Dr. Perkins, what do you got on this one?
So otosclerosis is a problem, essentially, as you know, where the bones, the little hearing bones, instead of being a nice joint where one bone causes the next one to move, those joints tend to fuse. Generally, the surgical treatment is a stapedectomy, where essentially the stapes foot plate is removed and a prosthesis is placed. In this situation, I don't know that a preoperative scan would have been able to identify which joint was fused. Oftentimes, what will happen is we perform what's called a middle ear exploration, where essentially we look and we palpate the bones to see which joint is not moving appropriately. So I don't know that a preoperative scan would have helped that. I mean, sometimes we can perform preoperative temporal bone scans to assess for any anatomic abnormalities that would prevent you from being a candidate for a stapedectomy. But it sounds like there was essentially an unexpected finding at the time of surgery. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I understand that. I'm not really holding a grudge or anything. what I wanted to ask you was that as a consequence of the procedure, I have some changes in my in my taste buds. I had a much more severe change at first, that everything tasted like metal. I have recovered some of my sensation now, my sense of taste. But I've had a permanent loss in salivation on that same side. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, other than drinking more water, is there any other approach for me? Because,
okay,
you know.
Okay. Let me just ask Nora to answer, because believe it or not, we're running out of time. We have a lot of people behind you.
Sure.
Go ahead, Nora.
Sure.
So there is a nerve in the middle ear, the chorda tympani nerve, that does give you some taste on that same side of your tongue. So that nerve can become either irritated or injured at the time of the procedure. Now, as far as like chronic dry mouth is concerned, we do not have great treatments for that. There are some medications that can increase salivation, but usually the side effects of those medications are also sweating and other things that tend to be less desirable. So hydration, lubricating mouth sprays, things like that are generally our recommendations as far as managing a dry mouth.
Thank you so much. Okay, I want to repeat once again, because this comes first always at WMC. The National Weather Service in Albany has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for Litchfield County in northern Connecticut, southern Berkshire County in western Massachusetts, Dutchess County in New York, southern Columbia County in New York. That is a severe thunderstorm warning. Okay. All right. We are now going to line number 7. And on it is Linda from Boriesville. Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of months ago, probably around the beginning of June, I had a rather severe nosebleed while I was in the shower. I'd never actually had nosebleeds. It was a little bit scary, but I was able to stop it. And then I had a couple more that week, and I ended up going in actually to your office actually, and had it cauterized. So since then, I've had a couple more, you know, kind of like breakthrough bleeds, and I've been using a saline gel on a little Q-tip to kind of lubricate. But I just wondered, my two questions are, is that what I'm doing, you know, the right thing, and if there's anything else I can do, and also how long would I wait before I'd go back in and say maybe there's something else going on?
Sure. Nosebleeds are incredibly common, especially in the drier weather months. And we don't necessarily think of the summer as being drier weather because of the humidity outside. However, if you're in air conditioning all day, if you have your air conditioner on at home, it still is relatively dry. Using mm-hmm. the saline gel is an excellent option. Usually I tell my patients to put a pea-sized amount on their fingertip and just sort of rub it against the middle dividing part between the nostrils, the columella, on either side mm-hmm. to apply the gel. Oftentimes, if you go up into your nose with a Q-tip, you may just create a little localized trauma on the septum, which is that middle part of the nose. As far as when to return to the office, if you're having fairly regular nosebleeds that are not decreasing with just minimal pressure, then it probably would be worthwhile to be reevaluated to see if there was a different vessel that needed to be cauterized, or like you said, if there's anything else going on.
And cauterized is what, doctor?
Cauterized is burn. So essentially in the office, we can use either a chemical cautery, which is silver nitrate, to burn the area, or we can use an electric cautery, like a bipolar cautery.
Interesting. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back. And we will now go to Greg in Courtright. Okay, Greg, you're on.
Yes, hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm a 58-year-old. My hearing's not quite what it used to be, and often I notice it kind of clogs up during the day, like I'm on an airplane or something. And I'll hold my knuckles up to my nostrils and just kind of blow gently and pop them back open. Is that a bad habit?
That's not a bad habit. Essentially, what's happening is your eustachian tube, the tube between the ear and the back of the nose, sometimes over time, there's a portion of it that's cartilage, and that can become a little bit more relaxed, which may cause some what we call eustachian tube dysfunction, where the ear sort of starts to get plugged up. When you're doing what you describe, where you sort of blow gently while plugging your nose, you're doing what we call a Valsalva maneuver, and essentially just opening up those eustachian tubes to equalize the pressure in your middle ear. It would be very difficult to hurt yourself by doing that, so it's not anything that is dangerous.
But as long as he raises it, for those of us who are on airplanes, and everybody has a different technique, mine is yawning as much as I can, and if you yawn, you know, you feel the hearing come back in.
Correct. So if you yawn, similarly, there are muscles that are opening the eustachian tubes. One thing that we try to ask people not to do, especially if you have a cold and your eustachian tubes aren't working well and your ears feel plugged up, the gum chewing and the yawning and repeatedly opening up your jaw, you can actually irritate your jaw joint a little bit, which also give you the sensation of ear fullness. So sometimes that can create a little bit of a problem, but, you know, none of those things are dangerous to do.
Okay, line, thank you very much.
Great, thanks.
Okay, let's go to line number two, and we will have Rich in Hudson, New York. Rich, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon. 10 years ago, I had dental surgery, and I had an impacted eye tooth on the left side. And when the dental surgeon removed it, he ruptured a sinus cavity, and the tooth was pretty well impacted, obviously. And he was able to suture it back up, but ever since then I've had sinus trauma on that area of my face, you know, in that location. Any suggestions?
Yeah, that's actually, it's not that it's common, but that does happen sometimes with dental procedures because the teeth can extend up into the sinuses. Now, do you have a fistula, like a connection between the sinus and your mouth where the tooth was removed?
A fistula?
Like an opening where the tooth was, where nasal stuff would drain into your mouth?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. You have more just sinus problems now as a result.
As you can tell, I'm suffering right now from a summer sinus problem, yeah.
Sure. So sometimes what can happen when there's a dental problem, because the teeth are so closely related to those cheek sinuses, the maxillary sinuses, it can cause inflammation in the lining of the sinus. The cheek sinuses drain through very, very narrow drainage pathways. They're a few millimeters or less in size, and they're also lined by that mucosa. So if there's inflammation and that drainage pathway is occluded, then sometimes what we need to do is actually perform procedures to open up that sinus drainage pathway. And those can be as simple as an in-office procedure where we use a little balloon to open that drainage pathway. Sometimes it can be more extensive where we actually create a small surgical opening and remove some of the bone that's sort of obstructing that drainage pathway. But it sounds like it may be something that would be worth being evaluated by an ENT for.
Okay.
Okay,
I should make an appointment with your office.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we're going to line number one now. And that is Bob in New Paltz. Okay, Bob, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm 74. I'm hearing impaired. I'm not calling about the hearing impairment, rather I'm calling about tinnitus. I suffer from it for many, many years. I'm wondering if we know anything new about it specifically with regard to alleviating the symptoms of it.
So that's a really common question in the practice because tinnitus can be so bothersome to people. Unfortunately, there are still no medications that essentially treat tinnitus. You know, when you see advertisements in magazines for over-the-counter supplements, those in studies have not really been found to be significantly better than a placebo. So it's not something that I could necessarily recommend would alleviate your problems.
So what, Doc, I'm sorry for interrupting, but what is tinnitus for those who don't know?
Sure. Tinnitus is essentially ringing or any sort of noise in your ear. So usually it's related to a hearing loss. So as this gentleman I suspect has a little bit of a high frequency hearing loss tends to be the primary cause for that ringing in the ear. At this point, usually what we recommend is what we call masking. Essentially, masking is other noise for your ear to concentrate on instead of concentrating on the ringing. So if it's something that's bothering you when you're trying to fall asleep at night, you put on a fan, you put on a white noise machine, something to sort of, again, create noise for your ear to pay attention to. Now, if you're somebody who wears a hearing aid anyway, your hearing aid can actually be programmed to create a little bit of noise to block the tinnitus. But there currently are not any really new advances in managing tinnitus, masking is still our best treatment option.
Is there any greater understanding of it?
So tinnitus generally is related to that high frequency hearing loss, so some injury to the inner hair cells of the inner ear. But it can be related to other problems other than hearing loss. So certainly if somebody has one-sided ringing or ringing without any hearing loss, you know, then we do sort of investigate other less common causes.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Okay. We'll go to line number 4, where we will find Naomi. Naomi, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I have TMJ, and I've had it for many, many years. But it doesn't affect me constantly. What's happening mostly now is, and for quite a number of, like, 10 years, I wake up in the middle of the night with extreme pain, and the pain radiates down to my right chest area and even a little bit in back and sometimes up towards the sinus area as well. And it usually lasts no more than 5 minutes, but it's really painful. I wear a night guard, but is there anything else I should be doing?
So we were speaking about this a little bit off air earlier. TMJ essentially is inflammation in the joint, the jaw joint. And we don't give this joint enough credit. You know, you think of your knees having arthritis changes and things like that. But this joint gets used all the times for talking, for chewing, and possibly in your case at night, if you're grinding at all, then it's really getting a workout. The night guard is a very good idea to try to reduce some of that grinding. But if you're still having symptoms with that, there are other things. Sometimes there are muscle relaxing medications that can be used. In certain occasions, we even use things like Botox, which will weaken those strong clenching muscles. But it sounds like what's happening is you're just having a really strong spasm or clench that's causing some pain to shoot into the sinuses and down into the neck.
Well, it's not the neck. It goes all the way into the chest. And if it was on my left side, I'd think I was having a heart attack.
I was going to say, yeah, anytime you're having chest pain, it certainly would be worth visiting with your primary care physician to evaluate that a little bit further. You kind of want to rule out the bad things like heart problems or even reflux. And as long as those are not happening, then sort of use some conservative techniques to manage the TMJ.
What about physical therapy?
Physical therapy works very, very well for TMJ problems. The physical therapists do an amazing job reducing a lot of the tension in the neck because, as we all kind of know, you know, they're all interrelated. When you have problems in one joint, it often can affect some surrounding joints and muscles, and they do a great job of trying to improve those
symptoms.
Yeah,
I have severe arthritis in my neck, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. We're going to go now to line 3, where we will find Sharon, I hope. Sharon, are you there?
Yes.
Great.
Hi, I'm calling with a question about earwax. I'm wondering, for a person with occasional earwax, what's the best or safest way to remove it?
So that's an excellent question. What your grandmother told you about not putting anything in your ear bigger than your elbow is true. We're not big fans of Q-tips in the ears because especially if you're somebody who actually does make wax, it tends to just push it farther into the ear canal. If you're somebody who just sort of has some occasional wax, usually something like an over-the-counter wax softening drop, oftentimes one of the more common ones is called Debrox. Really what that is a dilute hydrogen peroxide solution. So you can also just make a dilute hydrogen peroxide solution. A few drops of that once or twice a week generally will thin out the wax enough that it can then just be wiped out of the outer part of the ear with a washcloth.
Is there something called mineral? I mean, is it mineral oil ever work?
Mineral oils tend to not necessarily make the wax come out, but they can soften the wax for sure.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and what about syringes? I've seen people use warm water, you know, just a bulb of water, let it rest on one side and then tilt your head. Is that effective? Or
We tend to be a bigger fan of using the hydrogen peroxide drops only because anytime you're putting water into your ears, you're putting yourself at a little bit of a risk of developing something like a swimmer's ear.
Yeah.
While we were on the subject, we had a note from a guy who has swimmer's ear, wants to know, what are you going to do about that?
So if you have an active case of swimmer's ear, essentially what that is it's an ear infection of the external ear canal. And that usually requires prescription medication. It usually requires an antibiotic ear drop and sometimes a steroid ear drop. Also, sometimes it requires what we call debridement, which is essentially using a microscope to remove some of the debris from your ear canal. Once you've had it improve, the way to sort of reduce your risk of having it recur is to use either some sort of diluted alcohol ear drops, like a swimmer's ear drop over the counter, or even just using a blow dryer on the cool setting to try to help dry some of that water in the ear after showering or after being in a pool.
And sometimes it just comes pouring out later on.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Thank you very much. All right. Let's go to line number five. All right. Line number five. And thank you to Joe Makowitz. He's keeping an eye on which line goes next. Appreciate that very much. He's a super volunteer. Thank you very much, Joe. And let's go to Chris. Chris, you're on.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had some information about poison ivy, a product that I found online. My poison ivy was becoming systemic, where I would just barely touch poison ivy and it would spread over my whole body, and I was starting to stop gardening because it was so severe and painful. And I just went online and I found amazing jewelweed, which, you know, is a plant. I believe the Native American Indians use the plant, the flower, for maybe burns and stings. And I found a soap tincture and a salve, and my symptoms went down in a day. My whole body was covered, and I was wearing bandages to keep it from spreading. And it's concentrated jewelweed, I think beeswax, and some vegetable oil, so it's natural. And whenever I garden and I know I might have touched poison ivy, I just go inside, wash my hands, and I don't get poison ivy anymore.
Okay,
the way I used
great,
to.
Great.
It's
let's have the
really
doc
miraculous.
Let's have the doc give a response, and then because we're almost out of time, we want to move on. Go ahead, Doc.
Similar to the other more natural remedy, I have certainly heard of the jewelweed as a remedy. And if that works for you, I don't think there's a lot of risk to it. You know, your chances of having a reaction to that as far as plant-based medication exists. But as long as you're not having any reaction, it certainly sounds like a very nice way to manage the problem.
All right.
Well, it's made me able to garden again, and I've recommended it to other people who have kind of systemic poison ivy. I think you can get it in your bloodstream, and then you just get it really easily.
Great.
I'm
okay.
Not sure if that's true.
Thank you
not.
Very
okay.
much.
Thank
Thanks
you.
A lot. Okay. Let's go to Cliff in Kingston. Okay. Cliff in Kingston, you're on.
How you doing?
Doing good.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Great.
All right. For a long time, I've had like a bent cartilage in my nose. And whenever I lay down, whenever I turn onto my left side, my nose clogs up completely. And then when I turn back over to my right side, it takes almost forever for it to clear up when I go to bed.
Okay, we're going to get an answer for you. Go ahead.
So most likely you have a deviated septum. That middle part of the nose that's cartilage is crooked. Sometimes you can use over-the-counter nasal steroid sprays like Flonase or Rhinocort to help reduce the inflammation, and that's enough to open things up. But other times that is something that has to be corrected surgically with a septoplasty.
Oh, boy. Uh-huh. Okay, thanks a lot. We're running out of time here. Thank you. And now we're going to go to Joe, line number... I'm becoming dependent on Joe. Line number two. All right. Joan, you're on. You got to keep it quick because we're running out of time. Go ahead. Hello?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm Joan.
That's what I said. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, hi. I just want to try to follow up on sinuses and the chlorine exposure to try to understand it. Unfortunately, I was being answered by your call-in system while you were answering the question, so I apologize if it's repetition, but you were talking about since I go swimming in chlorine very often, I wonder if that might be what's irritating both my penises, my ear, and my sinus, and I wanted to know if there are any other remedies, anything else you can explain
that
would help.
Typically with chlorine or other strong odors, sometimes patients with allergies can actually have just very strong chemical sensitivities to these things. Usually what we would recommend is just using a saline irrigation like the neti pot or a saline rinse bottle to rinse out the nose after exposure, particularly if you find it's irritating to your nose.
Well, I suspect that might be what it is because I swim 3 times a week. So would there be any other thing that would be causing pain over my right eye in particular, but right over the eyebrow, which I think would be a sinus irritation?
Yeah, that certainly could be a cause. It may be worthwhile to have an evaluation, but in the meantime, it may be worth trying the saline rinses.
Thank you very much. We'll go to line number 7 now and talk to Dan. But Dan, we only have a few seconds, so make it fast.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Twice in recent years, I've experienced severe ear pain when the plane was landing, probably earwax accumulation. I used eardrops, and it was less on the return trip, but still considerable.
Okay, Dan, you got to ask the question. We're almost out of time. Go ahead. What's the question?
What do you suggest? For the problem.
So usually that problem is actually with the eustachian tube. Essentially, air is trying to get back up your eustachian tubes into the middle ear. You can use things like a decongestant nasal spray like Afrin before your descent, and that will often help the eustachian tube work better and help the ears equalize pressure better before you land.
Okay, that's got to be it, though. We are just about out of time. Thank you, everybody who called in, and all of those people we left on the line. I feel badly about that, Karen and Elizabeth and David and Doug and Sid. Cynthia, that's a lot of people, and I don't want you to be unhappy. Just keep on calling, and maybe next time a little earlier. Okay. I'd also like to thank our wonderful Dr. Nora Perkins for joining us today. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Jordan Taylor. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz, and very nicely. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.